Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Finance here at Zacks. I'm your host, Ben Raines. And today we're going to be doing a big sports betting update because it's been legalized for a while now. And then we're also going to do a look at the sneaker business because another company is trying to get back into the business of basketball shoes. But before we get into any of that, I want to say, remember, if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com. Also, make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. So before I get into this sports betting update, because there's been some big news recently, I want to do just a quick, maybe 30-second or minute recap of how we got here and what's going on, just in case we have any listeners who aren't as up to date with the legalized sports betting scene here in the United States. So the U.S. Supreme Court struck down PASPA, which is the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. This was a 1992 federal ban on legal sports betting in the United States. So they struck this down in May of this year, so May of 2018, after they heard oral arguments in the case in early December of 2017. So it's been about a year since they've heard the initial arguments. And this did not legalize sports betting on a national scale at all. It made it legal for states to introduce sports betting on a state-by-state basis. So think of it kind of like marijuana, which has slowly become legalized on a state-by-state basis. And it could eventually become a huge majority of states with some holdouts who might decide to hold out over a really, really long period of time. And then sports betting has been banned, as I said, pretty much everywhere except for Las Vegas in some select areas. But now, since May, there are a total of 8 states, including Las Vegas, who have introduced legalized sports betting. And there's some pretty good reason behind this. The American Gaming Association says that more than $150 billion, with a B, is bet on sports illegally every year in the United States alone. And that number could even possibly be on the low end. That's what it gets hard to know how much is spent on an illegal market. For instance, though, roughly $5 billion is bet on the Super Bowl alone every year, with about 97% of that coming illegally. And now these 8 states, the money is coming out from the underground, and slowly they're going to be able to tax this money, and that is the idea of why these states want it. And now I'm going to just go through the states that have it and then do a little bit of an example of what's going on in one of the big states, in the state that pushed all of this forward, and that is New Jersey. So at the moment, though, Delaware was the first state besides New Jersey to officially introduce legalized sports gambling in June, and then New Jersey followed right behind them. And then after that, you had Mississippi. West Virginia became the 5th state. Then you had New Mexico, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island is the most recent state to introduce legalized sports betting. So that's 8 states, with Nevada. And then you also had New York and Arkansas recently passed bills, so it's not official there, and we'll see what happens with that. And then you have roughly 30 other states who are considering bills at the moment because they've been introduced at some level in those states. And then you have around another 10 states who seem pretty opposed to it at this point altogether. And like I said, it'll just be kind of over the next 10, 15 years, we see what happens on a state-by-state basis over a long period of time. But now I want to look at New Jersey as a little bit of a case study of what's going on, in particular with the mobile betting world. So you had the Borgata Casino, which is owned by MGM. They introduced sports betting on June 14th, and then bettors are also able to place their bets via the Play MGM app, which is the mobile betting platform owned by MGM. And then FanDuel rolled out their online sports book and betting app on September 1st. And FanDuel was actually bought out by Betfair US, which is partners with Paddy Power Betfair, which is a huge European betting giant. And then William Hill put their sports betting app, that debuted a day after FanDuel, so on September 2nd. And then Caesars launched its own betting app on September 6th. And then you also had 888. So 888. It's 888 Sports app that debuted in October. And then you had BetStars Sportsbook, which is the online betting platform of another company that at one point was really popular in the U.S., and that was PokerStars. That's their now bet, their online sports betting platform was rolled out in New Jersey as well. So that's all of these are just legal in New Jersey on a case-by-case basis, and then states will, these different states, not all of the eight states have online betting legalized completely yet, but that's where it's headed, and that's where all of these gaming companies, as well as the bettors, as well as the leagues themselves, really want this mobile online betting to become the norm, because that's when you can do all the live in-game betting and you're just more likely to bet when you don't have to even leave the comfort of your couch when you're watching games that you're betting on. And then just for reference on how big this has become in the media sense, there is a website, a publication called The Action Network that's been around for a little bit now, that last year they hired the former editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, Chad Millman. He now runs the site. And then just a couple days ago, it was relatively big news in the sports media world. They grabbed Darren Rovell from ESPN, who has become pretty famous in the business of sports beat. They stole him away from ESPN. So that's just kind of showing where this market is headed, that it's so big now that you have a pretty huge website with some big media talent that's dedicated only to covering the scene of sports betting in the U.S. And then the most recent numbers that have come out for New Jersey. So as of October, nearly $600 million worth of bets have been placed in the state of New Jersey in roughly 4.5 months. So that's where you can see why these states might be more and more inclined to do this. In 4.5 months, $600 million has been bet on, and then the state gets whatever they get of that going forward. And then, as I said, this live in-game betting, it's going to be huge for the gaming companies like MGM and Caesars and William Hill. And then also it's going to be huge for the leagues like the NBA and the NFL, which brings me to one of the big pieces of news over the last week, and that was that Major League Baseball last week signed or announced a multi-year deal with MGM for an undisclosed amount. But the basic idea of the deal is that MGM Sportsbook will be able to use Major League Baseball's official statistics feed and then have access to other stats on an exclusive basis. Plus, the casino and resort giant will now be able to use official Major League signage and logos along with individual team logos. And then MGM will also have a presence at the All-Star Game as well as the World Series, though it's unclear exactly what this is. But I want to read a couple quotes from the commissioner, Rob Manfred, because Major League Baseball has kind of been notoriously old school in their thinking. But some of his quotes are really, they really help show how Major League Baseball is viewing this sports betting as an opportunity to create a better product for fans and just hopefully help propel Major League Baseball forward, because there's been a lot of talk that baseball is on the decline. But I think these quotes from Manfred really illuminate what their mindset is and why they wanted to do this with MGM. So our partnership with MGM will help us navigate this evolving space responsibly, and we look forward to the fan engagement opportunities ahead. And this is from a press release, and then some of the other ones are from ESPN. There has been a huge change in public opinion in the whole legal framework surrounding sports gaming, and I think it has presented an opportunity for all sports, in baseball in particular. And this was Manfred telling ESPN, "Our research is really strong on the idea that sports gaming is an important source of fan engagement, and we operate in a competitive environment, and we have to take advantage of every opportunity to drive engagement from our fans." And then this was actually kind of interesting that Manfred spoke specifically about how baseball is criticized by their pace of play, these really long games, all these pitching changes. And he said that that could even be a positive for this live sports betting because it, quote, it gives the opportunity to be creative with respect to type of wagers within a game. So baseball, Major League Baseball in particular, as I said, had been notoriously pretty behind the times in terms of they don't want players celebrating all this kind of stuff. But they partnered with MGM, and they're now the third major sports league to partner with MGM specifically. And that came after the NBA, which should be expected since their commissioner, Adam Silver, had kind of been at the forefront of this push to legalize sports betting in the U.S. And they did it almost the exact same deal in late July of this year. And then the NHL, so the National Hockey League, signed a similar deal with MGM Resorts, making it the official betting partner after that. And unlike the NBA's agreement, the NHL's agreement with MGM is not exclusive. And the NHL also didn't shy away by saying the term betting, whereas the NBA used the term gaming, which it's kind of all, it doesn't really matter, but it might scare away some people. That term betting, gaming, sounds a little less, I don't know, salacious for some people. So now we're just waiting on the NFL, which I'm assuming at some point they're going to do some agreement, though it's a little unclear if they want to get into that business yet. But I think that you have these owners and they're going to see the revenue possibilities, and they already see the amount of money that is bet on their sports. And when you think of fantasy and daily fantasy and just betting in general, how much it drives ratings and people just watching the NFL in general, that I think going forward you'll see maybe sooner than later the NFL being that fourth major North American sports league to embrace sports betting with a partnership like the ones the NBA, Major League Baseball, and the NHL has with MGM. And then for reference, basketball is the second most popular sport to bet on in the U.S., and this is based on Nevada sports books from 2017, behind football, which was number one. So in terms of basketball betting, $1.5 billion was bet legally in Nevada sports books in 2017. They don't break down the difference between NBA and college basketball, but some reports suggest it's around 50-50 in terms of that. And then the big reason why it's even that close in terms of the NBA not being by far more popular in terms of sports betting is because of March Madness pretty much alone there. That big month is huge for sports betting in the U.S. And it's not really that hard to think that the U.S. could eventually see its sports betting scene look like the UK at some point, though it's hard, like the UK, to see it maybe happening on a national scale. But the idea is that in the UK today, even, there's more money bet during every soccer match than is bet before the kickoff. It's all these in-game bets that are happening in real time. Is this person going to miss the penalty? Is how many corner kicks are going to happen in this 5-minute stretch? Something, all these crazy things. And that is what all these online betting companies are going to be able to do going forward. And this is why MGM and these leagues have partnered together, because MGM wants the most reliable, fast data, because that's how they're going to be able to offer their customers the best live in-game betting odds and all of that going forward. But this is certainly going to be just a really interesting thing to watch unfold over, who knows, it could be a 30-year period where there's still states in the U.S. who do not offer legalized sports betting. But in the next 5 years, it'll be really fun to see just how much money pours in to this legal sports betting scene. But now I want to move on to another topic that I find oddly fascinating. At a time when basketball shoes are not selling particularly well, another company is trying to jump back into the business of basketball shoes. So last week, it was reported that Toronto Raptors star Kawhi Leonard signed a multi-year endorsement deal with New Balance. And this comes as New Balance is trying to push back into basketball. For those people who don't know, Kawhi Leonard, he's a little bit of an understated superstar in the NBA. He forced a trade this offseason after pretty much not playing the season before for the San Antonio Spurs. He now landed in Toronto, and he had been unhappy with his current Jordan Brand deal. Jordan Brand, of course, is owned by Nike. So this was first reported last week by Yahoo Sports, though Kawhi Leonard himself, like, right away came out and said nothing is official yet. But it seems like this is going to be the case going forward, that they signed a deal that is reportedly worth significantly more, and this is from multiple reports, significantly more than $5 million per year, which would put him on par for like a four-year deal worth well over $22 million, because that was the deal that Jordan Brand offered him that he turned down over the summer. And they would also put him in around the top 15 in annual shoe deals in the NBA. And so for reference, New Balance is a private company, and it's set to relaunch its basketball division. They tried to land Joel Embiid this summer. He instead went to Under Armour. They tried to land Gordon Hayward, who had just signed with the Celtics. He instead went to a Chinese sports company called Anta. And it's interesting because right now, if you even go on New Balance's website, they do not have, and I like triple checked, maybe it's already up there at this point, but they don't even have any basketball shoes out there yet to buy, at least not anything new. But they have been in the sport of basketball before. They were in the NBA through the 80s. They launched James Worthy shoes. They were pretty famous at the time, and they last released performance basketball models in the late 2000s. This is interesting, as I said, just because this is coming at a time when you had Puma jumping back into basketball for the first time in 20 years, and they're trying to take on Nike and Adidas, which control the NBA in basketball shoe market, with Nike being by far the biggest, and then the distant third is Under Armour at this point. But yeah, it's just really interesting time to see two companies who had not been in the business of basketball shoes in a long, long time jumping back in this season. As I mentioned, Puma got in this summer for the first time in 20 years. They signed some highly drafted rookies, or rookies that went as the top couple picks in the NBA. And then they also have a presence with a little bit more off the court clout, some really famous pop stars like Selena Gomez, who's like one. I just looked at this as of this morning. She was like the second most followed person on all of Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, at 144 million people, which is just absolutely insane when you think about that. But I think the one person ahead of her as of this morning was Cristiano Ronaldo, who is the world famous soccer player. But those numbers, 144 million, I don't know, just to me sounds absolutely mind blowing. But that does help a lot with Puma in the sense that they have this off the court brand, which is becoming more and more popular with the Lululemons of the world and this athleisure wear. But another company you might see pop up in terms of this kind of retro start, or companies trying to get back into the NBA, is Converse, because they also recently signed an NBA player to a deal. Converse signed Washington Wizards wing Kelly Oubre Jr. To a somewhat odd multi-year footwear and apparel deal, in my opinion. And it's not even just my opinion. It's a strange deal, but it's something you might see happen more going forward. So they signed him to a deal where he won't wear Converse playing on the court. He'll still wear Nike sneakers on the court, but he'll wear Converse shoes and gear off the court. The partnership, they'll see him debut new Converse, like, coming to and from games. And it's really interesting, if you're not an NBA fan, especially not a, I guess you would call it more of a young millennial NBA fan, that the fashion going to and from NBA games has become kind of like a little mini fashion show, especially on social media, almost every day because there's an NBA game pretty much every day of the week, and it gets a lot of play. So you could see companies coming in and maybe giving guys some incentive to wear their clothing to and from games, not on the court where they're already wearing a uniform. There's now already jersey patches, and Nike has most of the players already. But this to and from games could be something to watch going forward. And I know it sounds kind of ridiculous, but who knows? It could easily happen. And what is interesting, though, is if Converse does get back into the actual basketball shoe business at the time when the retro look is coming back in a big way, the person or the company that will benefit from that will actually end up being the biggest sportswear company in the world, because Nike bought Converse for $305 million all the way back in 2003. And that Converse, as a lot of people know, it's one of the most historic shoe companies in the U.S. They dated back all the way to the early 1900s. 1908 is when they're credited with being founded, with the Chuck Taylors, and then they had basketball in all the way through the mid-80s, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, everyone was wearing Converse. And then, as the story goes, Michael Jordan gets drafted. Nike puts literally all of their endorsement dollars into him, and the rest is history. Nike's now by far the biggest sports company in the world, and they bought Converse for what seems like a relatively affordable price back in 2003. And then for reference, in Nike's most recent quarter, Converse revenues were up 7% to $527 million, driven by huge growth in Europe and Asia. For reference, though, very small, less than 5% of total Nike sales, because Nike's overall sales were up 10% to just under $10 billion. And then another, just throwing this out there because there's an idea that all the fashion cyclical, you could see Converse coming back in a big way. Another company you might see kind of come back in this retro way, which already is a little bit, is Reebok. And that is also owned by a much bigger company, and it is Nike's main competitor, and that is Adidas. And Adidas bought Reebok back in 2005 for a lot more than Nike bought Converse. They bought Reebok for $3.8 billion, and Reebok was a publicly traded company at the time. And unlike Converse, who saw a little bit of a boost to Nike last quarter, Reebok's kind of been holding Adidas back recently. The most recent quarter for Adidas, Reebok revenue fell 5%, despite double-digit growth in their classics, which that just means retro, so the stuff that people aren't wearing in any type of active athletic sense, because as Adidas noted, the classics double-digit growth was more than offset by declines in training and running. So you could see maybe Adidas discontinue trying to do this training and running shoes from Reebok. But Kasper Roystead, who's the CEO of Adidas, has said that they're standing behind Reebok and they're going to try to grow the brand. But we will see what they do with that going forward. It's definitely just a really interesting time for the shoe business, because as I mentioned, basketball shoe sales are not going up, but you're now seeing all more companies trying to get back into the business of basketball. So it's just really interesting, I guess, especially at a time when athleisure is growing so much, that these companies see maybe some inroads in things that have been not invested in as heavily recently, and that is basketball. Just a quick reference for listeners at the moment in terms of how these companies, these big basketball companies and big sportswear companies are doing on the stock market. As I've mentioned on the show before, Under Armour stock has been doing really well over the last year, but that has a lot to do with that it reached pretty much a five-year low last fall, and then it's been bought up since then. So Under Armour stock is up around 67% over the last 52 weeks, whereas Nike's up around 21% and Adidas is up 11%. And this is all well above the S&P 500, which is up around 2.2%. So these companies have still fared very, very well. But in general, it's going to be an interesting time to keep watching what goes on with this, these retro brands trying to get back into the big business of footwear going forward. And as I mentioned, with the evolution of sports betting, these two things will be really fun to watch going forward. So I'll continue to keep all of our listeners updated with any big news from that. But that does it for another episode of Full Court Finance. Until next time, I'm your host, Ben Raines. And remember, if you have any questions or episode suggestions, please feel free to shoot us an email over at podcast@zacks.com.